The following is a KTCK Sports Presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. Two straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the National Team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welpton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
McKinney knocks it down. Simichu! There's the opener! It started from the head of Weston McKennie. And in the dying moments of the match, with less than 90 seconds of the 90, the U.S. finally break through.
Howdy ho, P1s. Welcome to the Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer, and all that implies. Hey there. How you doing? It's me, Peter, with my soccer-talking BFF, and with the most magnificent head of hair I have seen in some time. Mm-hmm. He almost looks like a mad scientist or a swarthy college professor that hits on all of his students. The one, the only, Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter. I like Sam's description better. Latin American
Argentine technical director.
Yeah, Argentine technical director. Thank you.
I'm only going to give that to you when you start and consistently wear the Fila tracksuit to go along
with
it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll do that.
That's
yeah,
the only time that'll happen.
You can rock the tracksuit, Andy.
Huh?
You could absolutely rock the tracksuit.
Yeah, I will wear my Adidas tracksuit.
Adidas, not... Oh, that's right. They're sponsored. Sorry.
Argentinian. If you're going to wear a tracksuit and you're Argentinian... I'm not Argentinian, by the way. Let's get this straight for all P1s that...
You're Chilean.
That's right.
And Canadian.
It's the anti-Argentina.
Like
but yeah, the Adidas tracksuit is the look.
Are you eyeballs deep into South American qualifiers?
I watched the Argentina-Chile game.
That's the only one?
That I watched live, yes.
And where I've are they airing highlights. Those here? Do you have to buy some sort of package? Oh.
Pornhub.
Did you get a special code from Soroy? Is that what
the illegal
you did?
Cable box? He's just got
right.
Soccer.
Wink, the wink. Illegal cable box.
Man, we got so much to do today. I know the leagues are over. We were off last week. Congratulations to Man City for winning the Premier League. Congratulations to Chelsea for winning the Champions League. Congratulations, United States, for having an American play in a Champions League final, score in the Champions League, and lift the Champions League trophy. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about all of those things. And we will review our preseason predictions with none other than noted European football journalist Lars Siverston coming up today. We'll do the dribble and all of that, but I feel like the smart radio broadcasting thing to do, the responsible thing, and the thing that would make Jeff Catman the Catman happy would be to talk about the hottest soccer topic, which is the U.S. men's national team actually playing a meaningful game for the first time in so long. I don't even know when that was. It feels like a kajillion years ago.
A kajillion years ago?
It does, doesn't it?
Why?
Because it's been so long since they last played a meaningful game.
Oh, meaningful game. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, right, yeah.
Meaningful
yes,
game.
Yes, meaningful game.
Because
correct.
As soon as the ball got kicked between U.S. and Honduras, all of those icky, gross, pensive feelings of CONCACAF awfulness just washed right back over me like no time had passed.
Like how are we going to blow this meaningful game? When was the last one? 2019? It had to have been, right?
Obviously. Did they play any in 2020 before the pandemic?
Well, the pandemic hit in March, so
I don't remember. Yeah. It's been a really, really long time. And just so everybody understands, for anybody that turned on their TV Friday night and went, what is Nate? What? This was the semifinal for the Nations League tournament that they stopped playing back in 2019.
Man.
That's how long it's been, right?
Yes.
So U.S. versus Honduras, it is a CONCACAF meaningful match. And the thing that I just want to get off my chest here, Andy, and because you are as deep into CONCACAF as anybody since you actually officiate and work so many of these games, is that either if you've forgotten or you're relatively new to this, I think it's my responsibility as an elder to impart upon the youngsters or people who are new to this that all U.S. men's national team games – against CONCACAF teams of in meaningful moments feel exactly like this.
Right.
They're frustrating. Mm-hmm. They're slow. They're maddening. The U.S. always looks terrible. No matter how good they're playing, they just look terrible.
Yeah.
So whatever your reaction was to U.S. 1, Honduras nothing, that's exactly what you should just be prepared for no matter what as we go through this tournament and World Cup qualifying.
Right. Now, the fact that this was a, quote, meaningful game, then the only thing that mattered, this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end, the only thing that mattered was you wanted a win. So no matter how it looked to get there, at the end of the day, the result is a result, right? So
yes.
Would you be, having said everything you said and the way you describe these games and how they typically play out, you got to be happy with the 1-0 result.
Yeah, but I think that's where you and I, with age and experience in watching the U.S. men's national team, come some benefit. Because if you have spent any time reading online, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, there's a lot of angst and anger and concern and discontent over how the U.S. performed the other day.
Yes.
And you and I date back to a time where the U.S. used to roll out college players for games like this.
Right. And then you wouldn't even get the result.
Right.
Yes. So a couple of thoughts related to this very subject, specifically their performance in CONCACAF. And thinking about this, first of all, Honduras did not play a bad game. They it was essentially a road game for them,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
They're playing on the road against the U.S. and what should be a neutral venue because this is a tournament. And then the U.S. So I think Honduras played the game they needed to play with the outlook they had, is like keep it close. And then at the end, if it's still tied, go for PKs because you're on the road and you're just going
to
make
it. And it goes straight to PKs.
And
there
goes,
was no extra
right,
time.
There was no yeah. extra time. So that it further goes into that strategy. But when you think about the fact that Gold Cups, that the U.S. also plays all Gold Cup games at home and mm-hmm. now Nations Cup at home. Really think about it. Is this really helping the development of the national team? Because when they then have to play qualifiers and go into Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala, they just don't have enough of the, you know, nations, you know, not that Nations Cup and Gold Cup, they're not important tournaments, but at the end of the day, you know, what's really important is qualifying for the World Cup.
Are you asking, are you saying that because...
I just started thinking, you know, I think it hampers development. And hampers their ability to play better on the road in difficult environments when every Gold Cup, every Nations League game is played on home soil.
Ah, I see what you're saying. So it's not about crowds. It's just
no.
not being on the road. It's
yeah.
always constantly
yeah.
playing in the United States.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying.
It's easier.
Yeah, that makes sense. There probably is something
so
to that.
So the trade-off is dollars versus both for CONCACAF, because CONCACAF wants them here too mm-hmm. because of dollars and infrastructure. It's dollars, and then the U.S. Federation benefits from that. They get dollars versus development.
Yeah, I would say you're onto something there because it would certainly benefit the United States to play more of these games.
The only time they play meaningful games on the road in Central America is the qualifier itself.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I had never thought of it that way.
I thought of that when Honduras came here to Denver, and mm-hmm. then they played like they needed to play. It was a road game for them. They looked at this as a like a road qualifier, essentially, like that the same mentality.
Yeah, and Honduras, you know, smartly played the game exactly the way they needed to play it. And with Berhalter still trying to figure out what his best 11 is, I think there was a lot of surprise about Legette starting. I think as frustrating, I think... If you go back and read whatever everybody's saying, Jackson Ewell is the one player everybody tends to point at has had the weakest game, but he was also tasked with some of the most difficult assignment because of the way Honduras double manned him and decided they were not going to let him pass out of midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some discussion to be had about did Berhalter put the right person in that position?
Okay.
Because Tyler Adams is probably still
yeah,
hurt.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, he's more limited.
So, so is it a good sign that Berhalter went with a natural holding mid mm-hmm. versus trying to force another player that doesn't typically play that position, a Yunus Musa, a Kellen Acosta, a
yeah.
Weston McKennie, and ask them to try to do something that they don't typically do?
Yeah, and you leave McKennie at the eight because that's where you're going to play him and let him have his experience playing the eight, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the other thing to think about, too, is Berhalter, you know, they're already thinking about the qualifiers. Again, that's much more important than this tournament. They're going to have to do a lot of rotating through the qualifying process. They're going to, I think some windows are going to have three games instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to play three games in the span of 7-8 days. So there's rotation involved here, a rotation strategy involved here with these two games also. So do you rotate in favor of the final, or do you rotate in favor of the semi, or do you try to balance them? So when it comes to his thought process for the starters, for his substitutions, you have to think about that too.
Yeah, and to that point, what gives me some pause to feel good about Berhalter is the bravery to start a Jackson Ewell in that position, even if you recognize that he may not be your strongest player because of this. Because you feel like, look, we should be able to beat Honduras in Denver in a semifinal with Jackson Ewell at the six, right?
Yeah.
And that way we can rest Tyler Adams or not ask somebody else to play that position because we'll be strong enough to pull this game off otherwise. And so instead of – there's just so much negativity around Berhalter in so many ways and questions about how he places people, I want to think about it in terms of I thought he made the brave choice and did the right thing.
Because he's got to get that kid minutes anyway,
he's
right?
Got to get he's got to get the kid minutes anyway.
At the end of the day, though he wasn't terrible, and defensively he was okay. The passing a little suspect, you know, under pressure. Was legit any better?
Well,
he was kind of invisible.
Well, so was Weston McKennie in many instances.
Yeah, I thought McKennie was a little bit more active, but maybe I just look at it through rose-colored glasses because he's FC Dallas ex.
I think this every time I watch the U.S. play a meaningful CONCACAF game. They all look like they ate a plate of fudge before this game.
Okay.
They're not, because my overall criticism of the performance is that everything's just too slow.
Yeah.
Every pass is too many touches, too much thinking, not enough just getting after the opponent who's playing in a mid, you know, all this tactical stuff that is just making it difficult. And the quality of our side, I think, is good enough now, skill-wise, that they should be playing faster.
Well, so my assessment, and it's very similar to that, a little bit different, but I feel, remember how we had seen this team play with so much swagger the last friendlies, these last few friendlies, the ones before, right? Team confidence, swagger.
Really small minnow nations, though.
Yes, but still playing with that confidence, and that confidence kind of went away, and they played safe, I felt.
But see, that's the difference between just a general CONCACAF friendly and a meaningful CONCACAF game. That's
both because of what's up here, like in your head, and how the opponent is playing.
The U.S. goes into these games no matter where they play them. And I would also suggest the lesser the opponent, the worse the U.S. tends to play in these games. The worst I've ever seen the U.S. play has been in like 2018, that game against Trinidad and Tobago in Trinidad. They were terrible the other day against Honduras.
Yeah.
Think about those games. The best I've seen the U.S. play in meaningful games is like at the Azteca against Mexico, or in Columbus against Mexico or Costa Rica.
We might very well see them play better on Sunday than we did against against a better opponent. But before we talk about Mexico and the game against Mexico, I do want to bring up Pulisic.
Yeah.
And your thoughts on how he did and his game.
I think when you think of this team and you realize we have stars, legitimate footballing stars in Pulisic and Sergiño Dest and Weston McKennie, I find it fascinating to watch those three guys individually easily get the ball taken away from them in one-on-one situations because you don't expect that from a Honduran guy that's playing in some unknown league in Central America. That tells me this is more about mentality than anything else.
Also this, teams will focus on Pulisic. They'll double team him. They'll focus on him. He doesn't necessarily have that kind of attention when he plays a random Premier League game for Chelsea because they have so much around him. He's just another guy. So when he is the man, it's going to be a little bit different for him.
And I think these games are refereed very differently.
Also.
And you, in particular, have insight into this because you're part of these things in your personal life, your professional life. CONCACAF games are just refereed differently because many times these referees aren't that experienced.
Yeah, right. Like and, yesterday's referee, or Thursday's.
The Jamaican referee. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very young referee. Yeah. Now, I thought he overall did a pretty good job. He communicated well. He kind of man-managed fairly well. But that clearly is a guy that hasn't really refereed a lot of soccer in his life.
And that is one of CONCACAF's challenges as given these referees more experience.
But that's what makes CONCACAF such its own special charming thing, because what Honduras did better than anything else is they pulled off the dark arts of CONCACAF in time. The amount of time that they successfully were allowed to waste in the second half, and every time the U.S. had any sort of momentum or rhythm, some guy would go down with cramps or something. I mean, we should spend an entire segment just talking about the stretcher and the girls.
That's very much part of the game here, and so you're going to have to adapt to that and figure things out. Now, ironically... They should have added much more injury time, right?
The announcer said four. The fourth official held five. But when I went back and counted, including substitutions and everything else, it should have been at least 10 minutes.
Ironically, it hurt Honduras in the end.
Ultimately,
they could have used that time.
They could have used the extra time because by the time, right. That is kind of funny how.
And
all
what
of that
is up with
out.
The teenage. Both they had both sets of girls and sets of boys.
Well, I see
with
I
the stretcher so service.
So if you didn't see the game, when Honduras started to have players drop like flies with cramps, the second player, the referee asked for the stretcher, and out walks four 14-year-old girls,
right?
Blonde-haired, barely
knowing
Gen Zers.
What to do, and they get there with the stretcher. One of the U.S. players has
to do the buckle and tighten the buckle.
So what is going on?
And then I was kind of impressed with how easily they lifted the guy up and carried him off the field. But the next time, it was four teenage boys.
Yeah, I know. So it's like they won some kind of like their team won the lottery or something. They got to do service.
I really wish CONCACAF or FIFA would crack down on that part of it, because it really I know that everybody, when we get away from the games, there's this kind of romantic, charming, ha 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 ha, it's CONCACAF, how cute. Mm-hmm. But when you're in the moment, it is absolutely the most maddening thing out there.
Yes. Now, I do think there was some kind of there was coaching about how to deal with that, because I think psychologically the U.S. team actually handled it pretty well.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So U.S. beats Honduras on a very, very late goal by a guy I'm going to guess 99% of the people out there had never even heard of before, Sabatiu. We can talk about that. How will they face up against their dreaded nemesis, Mexico? We'll talk about that next here on The Kick Around. I fell down a really weird rabbit hole this week, because
on YouTube?
Last week I had the this is a bad moment in every soccer fan's life, so if you play the game, is when your beloved pair of shoes blow out. You know what I'm talking about,
Peter? As you know, by playing Sunday soccer with me sometimes, this happened to me about 2 months ago, and
you finally get a pair that just fit and and they're great,
and you ride them forever,
and you ride them until they literally just, and that happened to me. That beloved pair of all blacked out Puma Kings just finally gave out, and I had to go find and buy a new pair. Now I kind of feel stupid for keep bringing up our age in this, but part of this for me is I don't like all the new synthetic material shoes.
No, you want kangaroo
skin. I want
skin.
Kangaroo leather.
Of course.
And of the Puma Kings, which they still make, are hard to find, but they're out there. But over the years, I have found, and I don't think anybody cares about my soccer shoes. The reason why I'm bringing this up is what I do think people will find interesting is the weird rabbit hole of how people break in their soccer shoes. And you can dive into the internet and find out, well, if you're doing kangaroo, you got to like put your shoes and your socks on, tie them up, and then get in the tub hot water and leave them on wet for 30 minutes while you kick the ball around, and then slather them in Vaseline.
So can I tell you, because I debuted mine last weekend, you were there.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I did?
What? You just put them on?
Opened the box.
And put them on?
Put them on. Wasn't too bad.
Man, I'm telling you, this is the weirdest. But if you, I would love to hear from P1s, because shoes and blisters a thing in other sports shoes? Like, do football players get bad blisters from football shoes?
They can. It's not like, it depends, you know.
How do you know? Do you play a sport?
I cover
I'm
sports.
Wondering. No, I'm just asking you. I don't know if you've ever had this problem.
I did when I played softball.
Yeah.
I wore cleats for the first time in a long time. And the first couple times was really rough, because I didn't buy like expensive cleats because I was poor, and I probably shouldn't have done that. But after a couple times, they broke in. It was fine. But yeah, my feet were tore up.
Like basketball shoes, they look so comfy.
Yeah, I'm thinking those sports that have some kind of stud or cleat in the shoe, probably that's an issue. But like basketball where you don't. And these guys wear their shoe once, right, in basketball?
A lot of times, yeah, it's one-offs.
They give them away.
So if that was a problem, they wouldn't be switching every
night. Yeah, so I got these things, and they're stiff and hard, and you put them on, and you're like, oh, my gosh.
Have you played in them yet?
No, because I, first off, trying to find old-school shoes like that isn't easy anymore, especially in a specific size.
Yes.
There's already a backlog shortage, et cetera. Anyway, so if you ever want to go in down a fascinating rabbit hole, go look up how to break in soccer shoes.
How long did it take you to get the new ones once the other ones went bad?
It took me 3 days of calling around to see if I could find somebody with them.
3 days, and you had to find hard-to-find shoes. I have easy-to-wear shoes, easy-to-find shoes, and it took me 2 months. I was playing in flats. This is the difference between
which shoes did you end up with?
Some kind of the ankle, the like where the ankle comes
but
up
what
a little
brand? Adidas? Yeah. The one that has the sock built into it?
Yeah.
It's maddening. Putting those shoes on is like trying to throw a vice on your foot.
It's really hard to get them on.
Yes, but I didn't know blisters.
They're great shoes, though.
I suppose. Anyway.
Got me a couple goals.
So if anybody has a good break-in... See, I always thought telling people to put... their shoes in water was a prank that you told somebody that would cause them to shrink even more.
Right. But
And if for every website that I can find that says you put them on, you get in the tub or in the shower and you do all this, I can show you another website that goes, do not ever soak your leather shoes in water.
No, don't. It's a terrible idea.
Are you saying you don't normally shower with shoes on?
No, I don't typically do that. No.
Huh.
So you would...
Not unless Mrs. Welpton asked me to.
Okay.
You wouldn't show up to Sunday soccer and borrow cleats like I was having to do.
No.
People felt bad for me.
Like, nobody
wants... Our good buddy Lawrence is like, here, use mine, please. Don't wear your
flats.
Would
you rather borrow Peter or play in bare feet?
I just wouldn't
Peter
play.
Wouldn't go. He just,
I just wouldn't show up.
He just
wouldn't
home.
Show up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just go. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't mean to bog down into that, but that was my fascinating soccer thing over the week was finding out all
that
the crazy...
Fine what you talk about fascinating, Peter. Speaking of high-level soccer, huh?
Yes. All right, so Sunday, the U.S. does play Mexico. By the way, I thought one of the more fascinating online things to witness was all the angst and anger about the U.S.'s struggles to beat Honduras and how just awful Greg Berhalter is and the U.S. men's national team is, how all of that suddenly took on a very different tone when Mexico almost identically struggled to beat Costa Rica in their semifinal.
You think Mexican soccer Twitter was also...
I think it was like, oh, we should probably not be laughing at the Americans.
Now, they did have one moment of brilliance. And the near goal?
The Chucky Lozano bicycle kick? Yeah,
dude.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Did he get called for pulling on the defender's shirt?
On that same play?
Yeah, because I had the volume down, and I thought I saw somebody, the way they restarted the play, I thought maybe he had called a foul, because I thought I saw him grabbing the defender's shirt. But that was an amazing moment. I think... We said this earlier. I do believe the U.S. will play better because the U.S. plays better against better competition in these things.
And the nerves are out of the way and meaningful game out of the way and all that.
And I have no idea if Berhalter will put Reggie Cannon back in.
Who starts at forward? Does a goal score or does he put Sargent? By the way, Sargent got a lot of heat, I guess, too. I thought Sargent had a decent game. He just didn't put the ball in the back of the net, saved one on the other side.
Well, I would
worked hard.
I would also argue that your two superstars, Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic, left him stranded, wide open, waiting to tap balls in they tried to shoot themselves.
That was the last pass that you were talking about. That last pass just wasn't there.
Yeah. Here's what I'm worried about. The Mexicans will press, and they're going to press really hard.
Yeah.
Way up in the defending end against the United States, and the U.S. has got to be good at breaking the press.
Yeah.
And that's going, and that's where I think the Jackson Ewell problem comes in.
And McKenzie, too. We didn't talk about him, but, you know, he's right on the ball.
I think he's okay.
Mm.
Okay. Mm. Okay, Andy. You're the non-partial opinion here.
I don't think ultimately he's the Brooks's partner.
He's
you know?
Certainly
and
not.
So that's who you're going to go after if you're Mexico.
The real what will make this game, make or break this game, is whether or not Tyler Adams is able to play. Because Tyler Adams plays that position naturally. He does it for his club team. He's the guy that can help break that press. And if they don't have him, it's going to be a mess otherwise. That's what I'm that's what I'm worried about.
What about Musa midfield? Shouldn't he start? Shouldn't we see?
I think
what
this
he
is
has?
Part of the rotation. Yeah, okay. This is where Musa comes on for Legette,
yep.
I do believe.
Okay.
And puts on, I think that helps that the Mexican national team hasn't seen him as mm-hmm. much.
Yeah. Because what we've seen, he's good, right?
Yeah.
With the jersey.
I yes.
The little we have seen, but it surprised me he didn't see some minutes. I thought he'd see 5 minutes. Something, throw him out there, even if you're going to start him Sunday.
Yeah, it was a weird... Yeah, I think that's one fair criticism of Berhalter is he waited too long to make substitutions mm-hmm. in the game for the U.S. I know that after the game he said, look, we thought the goal was coming. Mm-hmm. And so
he kind of wanted to keep that same team intact.
I get it. I just feel, you know, he probably could have pulled some strings earlier.
Yeah.
But the way that Honduras was just starting and stopping the game with all their antics just mm-hmm. made it really tough to do anything over the court. They just did that so well. And for the life of me, can't figure out why we can't figure out how to do that to the other teams.
Yeah.
And we need to do it. So they play at 8 o'clock. Again, it is on CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the broadcast, the talent, the pregame show, Clint Dempsey, who I thought was actually really good, your buddy Clint, because you've interviewed Clint. And we saw, you know, at that luncheon that he's well-spoken, actually. I thought he did okay. It's going to get, I'm going to have to get a little used to the play-by-play and talent and analyst.
Yeah, that was not great. It was okay.
Yeah.
Kate Abdo, again, the poor, I feel so bad for her. Because unlike the Champions League and Europa League stuff that she's doing for Paramount, where she's paired with people who are maybe a little bit more experienced in doing this, mm-hmm. or maybe has better direction or mm-hmm. a producer with her, whenever they stick her with these kind of random American guys, it just feels so podcasty and mm-hmm. loosey-goosey. And you can tell she's struggling to kind of keep the thing together.
She does. She hesitates to take control and kind of lets the guy. But that might be what they want. They're saying, let these guys go because they feel the audience wants that.
I think the Gooch, Clint, and who's the other one? Oh, Charlie
Davis.
Davis.
Yeah.
It's too informal.
To
for
me, it's one too many guys.
It's one too many guys, and it's way too informal.
Yeah. If they brought it down to two guys, I think it would be less informal because it's a different dynamic with only two guys.
And then the game analysis and play-by-play is...
Play-by-play was okay. The analysis was...
My biggest problem is... the Paramount Plus app on Samsung just would freeze after 30 seconds. But the Paramount Plus app on like Apple TV or on the iPhone worked great.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it's all that app stuff is so I ended up.
You couldn't just watch it on the channel?
Well, what I did is because I don't get CBS Sports Network on my subscription, my cable subscription.
Yeah. Okay.
So I turned on the Hispanic.
And
then I turned the audio down, and then I synced it with the Paramount Plus app on my phone to get the American audio. It was a lot of work.
Yeah,
but I'm a nerd that way.
You are.
All right, so 8 p.m. on one of those things, however you want it, U.S.-Mexico, Dos a Zero again? Could we possibly get another Dos a Zero?
Is that what your prediction is?
No, that's not my... We'll talk predictions later. because he's waiting for us all the way over from London, how about we... review our Premier League predictions for this past season, and we'll do that next with the great Lars Siverson here on the Kick Around. We will get into previewing Euro 2020, and we'll do it with our good friend Lars Siverson here.
2020? It's 2021, Peter.
Oh, sorry. It's still called Euro 2020, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You're right.
But because we've enjoyed his... partnership and involvement dating all the way back to the beginning of this previous Premier League season, aforementioned Lars joins us now via the miracle of the internet live from London. Greetings,
hi,
Lars.
Guys. Hi, how's it going?
Excellent.
I think the applause.
You don't get applause on the Football Weekly podcast, do you?
No, and in fact, I got booed at one of our live shows once.
Ouch!
that's how it goes sometimes.
Man.
Can I just say before we proceed? I know we're a bit pressed for time today. What a week it's been! I mean, 4 out of 5 days this week, working days, I could have breakfast outside in the sunshine, which I know to you guys is probably pretty common, but in London it is not common, even in the summer.
We haven't seen the sun over here in a couple weeks, actually.
We've had a very, very weird spring, very wet, very cold. It's unusually cool here in Dallas for this time of year. So maybe
I have nicer weather than you guys. I mean, this might never happen again.
It may never happen. And it also sounds like that you've been infected with the English obsession with breakfast.
Well, it's an important meal, you know. Also, because when you work from home, snacking is the enemy, right? So you really do need a solid breakfast. So you don't, you know, every time I'm stuck on a paragraph in an article, I kind of want to go into a cupboard and eat something. This is very bad. You can't be doing like this. A big breakfast will protect you from bad choices.
Lars, you've been such a good friend of the show over the last year or so. And one of the great things that we got to do this time was get together with you on one of the shows prior to the Premier League season and make predictions. And now's the moment where we get to review our sage punditry. So
I think this is great that we're doing this, because I certainly, before I worked in the business myself, one of the things that annoyed me the most was pundits who never get called out when things they've said turns out to be wrong. I think it's really like accountability amongst people who talk about sports in the media, I think is really important. So I've some of these things were really wrong, but I'm gonna own up to it. It's an important part of the game.
All right, well, Lars, I don't expect you to understand the ticket culture, which is the radio station this show is on, but laughing at oneself is a real strength of this radio station. So,
excellent.
All right. So, why don't you first tell us who you thought the top four in the Premier League would be? By the way, officially, it ended up being Man City, Man United, Liverpool, and then Chelsea were the top four this season. Who did you have in the top four, Lars?
I had Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea, and Manchester United. So 4 out of 4 in the Champions League spots, but in the wrong order.
In the wrong order. Interesting. Yes. Do you want to know what Peter and I predicted for the top four, Lars?
I do.
Peter and I actually had the exact same predictions and order for 1 through 4. We had City, Man United, Liverpool, and Chelsea.
Arms raised in the air.
Raising
the roof. Where's the roof?
And I think we even had an argument. We had a discussion about this on air. You guys liked Manchester United more than I did.
Yep.
In my defense, I didn't see the sort of Liverpool injury apocalypse coming, which I don't think a lot of people did.
You expected regression, but not quite that. Yeah.
Yeah. And my top pick, I'm kind of happy I got this right, because that was based more on faith than on logic. I thought there were more problems at City. I just had faith that Guardiola would fix it somehow, and he did.
Yeah, and when we had our preview show, that's the exact same thing we said. We just had faith that Pep fixes things, and boy,
He's
did
he. He's an incredibly smart guy.
Now, Andy, how far down did we go? Did we go to 6th?
We went all the way to, you and I went to 7th. On our show, Lars went all the way to 6th. And Lars, I don't know if you remember who you picked 5th and 6th.
I do. I had Tottenham Hotspur as my 5th pick and Arsenal in 6th.
Yeah, and we had that backwards. We had Arsenal 5th and Spurs 6th. And again, Peter and I had the same pick. So you picked Spurs ahead of Arsenal. And in fact, they'd finished 1 point ahead. So you got that right where we got it wrong. We both picked them a little higher, both to finish a little higher than they actually did.
But what I'm going to do now, I'm going to embrace the spirit of the ticket, as you say, and laughing at ourselves. And I have to say, one of my big swings, I'm looking at my preseason predictions now, one of my big swings was that I did not think Leicester were going to have a big season. So I'm just going to hand myself in to the authorities here and say, I thought Leicester were going to struggle, and they had a tremendously good season. So make of that what you will.
Well, you and us both, because we, on our prediction show, we had 10 storylines for the year that we were talking about, and one of those was the fact that Leicester, we both thought Leicester was actually going to go down in the standings, but in the table That they weren't going to do as well as they had the prior year, were wrong.
I think that's interesting, Lars, that your perception is that Leicester had a quote-unquote good season when for the second season of the row, while sitting essentially in a top four position all season and then farted it away in the waning weeks to fall out of Champions League. Is that considered a good season over there?
Yeah, I think the narrative, it's unfortunate for them that it happened that way. I think for Leicester, a club of their stature, finishing fifth, finishing above Tottenham, finishing above Arsenal, when you look at the finances, I think that is a good year. But it is unfortunate that it's happened twice in two seasons that they've lost the Champions League place effectively. But my reasons for predicting them to struggle was that they have to play all these games in the Europa League, that Jamie Vardy is a year older. And I just want to, rather than focusing on them struggling at the end, I'd want to praise Brendan Rodgers for finding ways, like managing to guide his team through all these extra games, for managing, you know, Jamie Vardy kind of stopped scoring goals, but when he did, they had Kelechi Iheanacho who started, and Rodgers changed his formation to accommodate that. So I think Rodgers, someone who's often derided because he's a very sort of pompous and self-important man sometimes, and he says nonsensical things, and he's easy to mock, Brendan Rodgers is, but I think he deserves a lot of credit for the job he's done at Leicester City this year.
So what one related to this, because this is another reason we had both Spurs and Arsenal finishing higher than they did, because another team snuck in there, and Peter and I both goofed on this one. We didn't think the Hammers were going to have the season they had. And I don't know where you thought they would finish before the season started.
I don't think, anyway, including David Moyes and the West Ham players and their families thought they were going to have the season they had, to be honest. I had them in 11th in my preseason. I had them as sort of in the sort of mid-table nowhere land, but maybe one of the more upwardly mobile teams of them. I think David Moyes, again, we've spoken a lot about pandemic football. I mean, his approach of just not really pressing at all, just kind of sitting back and letting the opponent have the ball in their half if they want to, but we're going to be really compact and make it difficult for you if you want to attack us. That's worked out really well. Scored the most set piece goals in the league. That's very interesting. In this day of analytics and looking for marginal gains and stuff, I suspect we'll see an increased focus on set pieces over the next few years. And I think actually David Moyes, shockingly, is slightly ahead of his time there.
You know, there's so many fascinating storylines from this season, all the way down at the bottom. I think Sheffield United and how the bottom fell out of what I thought was really fun, a fun team to watch and a great coach. I think that's an interesting story. I think Roy Hodgson's ending at Palace has its own interest. I think Wolves and that, how that didn't work out because Jimenez and Jota were gone. I think that's interesting. Leeds and Bielsa is a great story. The mystery of Arsenal. But I think if there's one story that deserves time to be talked about, is without question the big winner this season has to be Tuchel and Chelsea, just because of what he was able to do in a very short period of time. He gets they kind of got the best of all the worlds. They got their Champions League spot, they won the FA Cup, and they won Champions League. It's unbelievable what he pulled off this year.
Incredible. And I mean, that's, I'm looking at my preseason predictions here now. What I write about Chelsea, basically, I write that I like the squad and I like the signings, but I don't like the coach. It was basically the short version of it. I was never on board the Frank Lampard hype train. I think I've seen nothing to suggest that he's anything more than an average manager at this stage of his career. And you saw, as soon as you got in, someone like Tuchel, who's shown both at Dortmund and really at Mainz before there, he did tremendous work, that he is a really, really smart guy. You can see how it all came together, and I think they're an interesting pick to win the league next season.
All right, here's what I would love for you to do as briefly as you can. Explain tactically what you think, or even just from a managerial standpoint, it may have been mentality more than tactics. What was it that Tuchel did differently from Lampard that made them such a better team almost instantly?
They're almost the opposite team now, because under Lampard, even when they were winning games, they were really chaotic. And like, we all have our different ideas of what a good soccer is and what good football is. I always struggle with teams that are chaotic. It makes me feel uneasy. And they kept, you know, conceding goals from counterattacks because their midfielders had just suddenly run away and there was no one in midfield. I mean, there was just no shape to them at all. And that really stresses me out when I watch a game. And what I don't understand how to Tuchel did this. It's an absolutely incredible feat of coaching. He went into a team that was really disjointed, even at their best, was very chaotic. And in this season where you have almost no time on the training ground because there are more games than usual, more rest days, all this stuff we've talked about, so little time to work with this team, he's made them so well organized. When you look at Chelsea now, the distances in the teams, the players are always in the right place. Mm-hmm. They're always really nice and compact. They don't leave you any space anywhere. They track each other's movements so well so that space doesn't open up. This is stuff that usually you'd say you need at least a full preseason with a team, a couple of weeks in the Alps or wherever you go on these tours to work on this stuff. But somehow Tuchel has made... In terms of coaching and communication, coming into a new country, to a new team, making this happen this quickly, it's an absolute masterpiece of coaching. And I can't praise it highly enough. It's remarkable. So the great thing he's done is add structure, add shape. If you watch them against City in the Champions League final, City couldn't find space to play football because they were always in the right position without the ball. And they always pressed together when they pressed. And they're so well structured. And it's unbelievable how Tuchel's managed to do that mid-season with no time really on the training ground at all.
All right, speaking of the opposite of that, what do your notes say about Spurs and Mourinho specifically? Mourinho.
I was always wrestling with myself a bit with Mourinho because my gut feeling was extremely negative, but I think I have some biases there. I don't like the guy.
I heard you say they were going to play exciting football, or that you thought
no,
they
I
would.
No, I can't possibly have said that. No.
Hopeful that they would.
Hopeful. What you're always trying to, when you know you're slightly biased against someone, you want to give them every chance to prove you wrong.
Right.
Yeah, no, and that's okay, because Peter said that he thought Mourinho was a changed man.
I was watching the TV show and he seems so nice and friendly.
And I want to quote myself because I said, we will see the real Mourinho before it's all said and done.
Yeah, you were exactly right. And I feel slightly cheated in a way. I should have been true to myself and I should have been honest about how deep my suspicions of Mourinho is.
You were watching the show too.
But I'm so negative about him. But can I just go? I spoke to someone who's worked as a sort of sporting director, as a general manager in a big sort of European football club about Mourinho. And he said, the problem with Mourinho is that he keeps saying he's a changed man. And people who say that about themselves, you should always be very, very suspicious. If other people say that about you, that you're changed, fine. But if you say that you've changed, you almost certainly haven't.
Yeah. Okay. And plus at that age, you don't change.
And I just very quickly, because this is driving me nuts, this whole conversation about Conte and Daniel Levy having conversations about coming together to let him be the coach at Spurs makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And so all the news that's come out in the last 24 hours that now officially Conte is already mad at Levy because he won't give him enough money just seems to, like, why did you even bother with this conversation in the first place? Because that was never going to work out. Let's remind everybody. Coach that loves to get in arguments with management over money spending. Manager who went through two transfer windows without spending a dime. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I was about to tweet something about how the talks appear to have broken down because Antonio Conte has discovered that Tottenham are Tottenham, and Tottenham have discovered that Antonio Conte is Antonio Conte.
Yeah,
and it just seems to me that there was no need to negotiate before we arrived at this. Listen, this is the reason he left Inter is primarily because they said, listen, our finances are a mess. We're going to have to sell players and raise at least 70 million euro this summer. And I don't know if we can bring in anyone, is what they said. And he was like, well, that's not for me. So I'm leaving.
But by the way, he
somehow managed to both say I'm leaving and get a payoff for not for, I guess. I don't know how he does it. What a guy. But like, I don't understand how you go from that to thinking Tottenham, where, like, they're certainly not going to spend a lot of money unless Harry Kane goes. But then if Harry Kane does go, then you wouldn't want to go to Tottenham.
Yeah,
so right. I didn't see that working at all.
All right. Well, I think overall I would give us... Lars, how would you grade your predictions? You give yourself a B maybe? Solid B?
Well, C plus. I mean, I'm happy I got Man City right. I'm happy I got the right top four. But I made a couple of big swings, and they were mostly wrong. Leicester City, I had 10th. I completely misread that situation. And I had Southampton as high as 9th. Whereas, of course, they collapsed completely in the second half of the season and finished 15th. So there were a couple of teams I had high hopes for who didn't deliver at all. I had two of the three teams going down correct. I had Fulham and West Bromwich both going down.
Okay.
But, and I'm embarrassed to say this, I had Aston Villa following them there.
So did Peter.
So did I.
Absolutely yeah. not correct.
Yeah. All right, Andy, how do you, so, what was your grade, Andy?
I would grade you and I.
No, no, you, just you.
I would give myself a B.
All right, yeah, I'll give myself an A minus. It wasn't the year I predicted Liverpool would miss winning Premier League by 1 point.
If you did A minus, then I have to be higher because I predicted better than you did.
Okay, well then you should do that. You should.
No, I don't think you were an A minus. I think you're a solid B.
Okay, well I. That's your opinion,
we're,
sir.
We're harsh graders here, right, Lars? I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. You should be your own harshest grader. I'm putting myself down to a C because I think I can't be that wrong about Villa and that wrong about Leicester and still get a B, I don't think.
Okay, that's, now you're making me feel bad about
well done,
myself.
Lars.
Okay, Lars, I want you to stick around because we're going to convert to something that's about to start. The European Championships start on Friday, and we will get the group-by-group breakdown with Lars next here on The Kick Around. All right, I need to issue a correction because I realized what I came out of my mouth was not what was in my head. Yes, I'm aware that Chelsea did not win the FA Cup.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
Are you sure?
Well, then what kind of producer job were you doing when you let me say it and didn't correct me on the air?
I can't dive into your brain, yes, Peter.
You heard me say it, though.
I know.
Why didn't you say, wait, what are you doing, sir?
Maybe he just wants to set you up for failure.
You just want to watch me burn to the ground.
I really do.
All right, welcome back to The Kick Around. Live via the miracle of the internet from London, England, is our good friend Lars Siverston. Hello again, Lars.
Hello again.
And I want to thank you for participating in reviewing predictions, but this is really where your expertise is going to come into play because we're back into summertime international tournaments.
Yes. I've got Euro fever. How are you guys doing? Have you got Euro fever?
I'm pushing about 99.7 degrees.
Yeah. No, I actually wanted to ask you, how does the Euro tournament figure in your thinking? I mean, it isn't close to the World Cup for you guys, I guess, because you're not in it. But
yeah, no. As a spectator, as a fan, a supporter of the game, yeah, it's number two for me. Yeah, probably number three for me because I do have Latin American roots and Copa America is pretty important. But yeah, it's after World Cup and Copa America for me, it's way up there. For you, Peter, I'm assuming number two.
Yeah, it's my second favorite tournament just because I get to truly watch it almost purely as a neutral and a fan. I don't, you know, I have any particular ties one way or the other. So yeah, I love the Euro tournament. I'm excited about it this year, although I'm very worried about how good the games will be considering the mileage everybody has on them. I
think there is a danger we could have some bad games. I mean, I think international football is almost more about the drama and the storylines than about the quality of football, I think. I mean, obviously, fun games are fun, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I think we all kind of accept that, for instance, the latter stages of the Champions League, the quality of the football is always going to be a little bit higher than it can be for national teams for a myriad of reasons that we're not going to get bogged down in. But for me, it's always the cultural element of international football is a little bit different and something club football can't really match for me. But will you guys be picking a team to follow or will you just be swept along with whoever turns out to be fun?
Oh, yes. With a Chilean mom with Croatian parents. So Croatia for me, and on my dad's side, it's Scotland.
Andy's like Bennington. He just kind of picks up on a whole bunch of teams based on some relative that he has.
Any given World Cup, I can have eight countries in the running for the trophy. So, but yeah, it actually allows, you know, it allows you to hang your hat on a team and root for somebody.
I have consistently been mystified by the frustration that is England because I have English and Welsh heritage. But just from a soccer fan perspective, it's just amazing to me that you can have a nation filled with all these world-class players that play at amazing in my favorite league and be so terrible as a national team and so inconsistent from year to year. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm without, you know, spoiling what's about to come, I wonder if you might actually be heading for a frustrating summer yet again, Mike.
I think so. All right, so let's do this. We're going to spend a couple of segments going through these groups. We'll start off with Group A. The first game on Friday is Turkey versus Italy. In this group is Turkey, Switzerland, Italy, and Wales. Now, remember, the reason why this tournament is a little bit different, they've expanded it, but they didn't expand it enough, because now it's the top two teams, and then how many third-place teams get through?
Yeah, so I don't love the new format. I think there are too many teams. And, yeah, but almost all of the third-place teams are going through. Only a couple of them who aren't.
Four of the six go through.
You're going to have to try real hard to get knocked out of the group stage this time around.
No, but it was 24. Last Euros, it was also 24. It's the second Euros that we've had.
Oh, is this? Okay. All right. So anybody in particular, any notes about Group A that you'd like to discuss?
Italy are probably going to be fun Italy rather than sort of a defensive and cantankerous Italy, which I think is something to look out for. We have an idea of what Italian football is like, that they have sort of defenders who are made from granite yet are somehow incredibly sneaky, and they have a pair of sort of roving warmongers in midfield who are just sort of trying to kick people and cause damage, and they have really good center forwards. That's kind of what we associate with Italy, and that they really sort of often very bad games. But this is a kind of a fun team. They try to play attacking football. They have sort of midfielders who are light on their feet and can pass the ball. The really interesting thing is that if they'll be able and capable of playing that way against good opponents in a tournament, because under Roberto Mancini, the former Man City boss, they've played very attacking and positive football, but mostly against like really bad teams in qualifying. So we're intrigued to see when they come up against some stronger opponents if they can still do it. But I think Italy could be a fun team to watch.
All right, that game kicks off the tournament, Turkey and Italy, at 2 p.m. local time. And by the way, all these games will either be on ESPN or the ESPN app, or sometimes even on Big Boy Broadcast ABC here in the United States. Group B is Russia, Belgium, Denmark, and Finland.
Yes. Okay, so a lot to talk about here. So obviously Belgians are favorites to go through. They're something like third favorite with the bookmakers to win the entire tournament. I'm not fully convinced they'll go that far. I think they have some, their best players are very good, but the defense is a little bit old and slow. That worries me. And I'm not sure Roberto Martinez is a company tournament winning manager in this sort of setting. But in this group, you keep a little eye out for Denmark, I think. They have a really solid spine to that team with the goalkeeper. Kasper Schmeichel from Leicester, Simon Kjær from Milan in defense, who's had a good season, Thomas Delaney from Dortmund next to Pierre-Emile Højbjerg from Tottenham in midfield, with Christian Eriksen sort of flitting about doing fancy playmakery things. There's a good spine there, and they've got a manageable group if they get out of that one. I think their opponents, if I read my wall chart correctly, they're going to I think they face something like the team that finished second in Group A or something.
It depends if they finish first or second in their own group, but they do play
to finish second.
They play every game at home, Denmark does, which is an advantage.
Yeah, so I quite they're outsiders, obviously, but I think they could be a team to follow. And I'm also just a heads up on Finland qualifying for their first ever tournament, a country that's more of an ice hockey country than a football country. Player for player, definitely one of the weakest teams here, but they have a lot of spirit, and they've never been here before. The country is very excited on their behalf, and their nickname are the Eagle Owls. They're the Owls, I guess, which is nice.
Well, and they have my favorite player, Teemu Pukki.
Of course, Teemu Pukki.
I would say never bet on a team that what you're describing about them is their fighting spirit. Because
think about how many teams, think about the Leeds or Sheffield United a couple of seasons ago, or there's always a team that is better than the sum of her parts, right? Yeah. They're so team oriented, they always create conflict and havoc for everybody else. And I just wonder if Finland is
this could
that
be
team.
The Iceland of a couple of years ago, then, huh?
Okay. Yeah, that's what they're hoping. I mean, again, going by the betting markets, they are alongside North Macedonia the lowest ranked with the bookmakers. I think that is correct.
Right.
But I love the fact that they're there. And like I said, I'm not wild about the new format and there being too many teams, but I do see the upside of some of these lesser storied countries actually making it to a tournament and what that can do for popularity of football and for people in that country.
All right. Then Group C is Austria, the Netherlands, Ukraine, and the mysteriously named North Macedonia, because me being the ignorant American, I have no idea who or where that might be. So help me out, Lars.
Well, they're Macedonia, basically, that I've changed to be North Macedonia.
Is there a South Macedonia that I'm unaware
of?
No,
but it's all to do with an ongoing dispute with Greece about who are the real Macedonians.
Oh, okay.
Because I think Greece can think that... that they're the people of Macedonia, going back to Alexander the Great, geographically belongs in Greece, and so Macedonia shouldn't be called Macedonia. They used to be called the former Yugoslavic Republic of Macedonia. Now they are simply North Macedonia. It's to do with a sort of historical and geographic dispute with Greece.
I didn't pay attention to that.
Like I mentioned, rank outsiders here.
Yeah.
But they do have the magnificent Goran Pandev.
Yes.
Who was part of Mourinho's treble-winning team at Inter. He's 37. He looks like he's about 50 and moves like he's about 50. But he's a very intelligent, you know, technically proficient footballer. One of those guys you don't really see so much in the game anymore because it's so much about pressing and running and this sort of thing. He's a guy who is really all in his brain and his technique. But at 37, he's still a key player for them.
He does look like the kind of guy that still smokes at halftime.
I that would not surprise me. And again, he's someone who looked about 5-6 years ago, looked like, you know, man, you're now too slow to play at this level. But here he is. And he's obviously a real legend for that country. And if anyone's going to do anything for them, it's going to be him, but probably not.
Yeah,
hold
on one sec, because the Netherlands are in this. And if any American just typically looks at this group and you go, oh, well, the Dutch are absolutely going to win it. And then I have to remind them that Frank de Boer is their manager. And I, based on what happened with him here at Atlanta and what happened with him at Crystal Palace and what happened to his start as the manager of the Dutch, all bets are off on Orange, right?
Exactly right. And I watch a bit of MLS, so I know what you're talking about. But actually, you guys kind of know that story better than a lot of European football watchers about how things went down in Atlanta. And what I tell people, and I realize this is a gross simplification, but I said that he took over a team who played like Bielsa's Leeds, and he turned them into a team who played like Van Gaal's Man United. And
I'm not even sure it was that good, to be honest with you.
But it is the thing about just passing the ball all the time with no forward progress whatsoever and no plan. And yeah, and designated players apparently walking out of training, according to rumors and this sort of thing.
Oh,
but no, he has somehow wandered into the Dutch national team job. And so far, it hasn't been very good. Holland are a team who have some clear strengths. You know, Matthias de Ligt is a good defender, even with Van Dijk out, him and De Vrij from Inter would be a solid partnership. You know, Frankie de Jong of Barcelona in midfield, Wijnaldum of Liverpool in midfield, Memphis Depay up front. You know, the only player who's also released a rap single in which I think he addresses some of his weaknesses as a footballer. I'm not sure this was intended, but he does actually in his rap say, one of the lyrics is, I'm still being reckless when I shoot, which is true. He's incredibly reckless. He shoots from everywhere. And I would like to see more of that. These footballers who release songs to actually have some self-criticism of their footballing bits in there. But no, listen, there is a good team in this Dutch squad, but I'm not confident at all that Frank de Boer is a man who can find it.
All right, that's the first three groups. When we come back, we will get through groups D, E, and F, including the group of death and the greatest matchup of this tournament, coming up next on The Kick Around. All right, we will do America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble, where Andy will catch us up on all things going on in South America. But we return back via the miracle of the internet with our good friend, the Norwegian living in London, Lars Sivertsen. I appreciate you doing this, buddy. Thank you, as always.
It's fun talking about this stuff. I've spent a lot of the week writing and reading and getting ready for the Euros, so it's good to get some of it out of my brain and into the aether.
Do you ever brag to your fellow European soccer journalists that you're on a radio show in Texas? You should.
I do mention it in passing. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Just, you know, don't tell you. Here's the thing. Eventually, somebody's going to walk up to you and go, dude, I listened to you on The Ticket. And when that happens, you should send me a note and let me know, because it's going to happen to you eventually. This radio station is insanely popular here in the United States. And so it won't surprise me at all when that invariably happens to you.
There was, in fact, a Norwegian gentleman on Twitter who commented that he was listening to your station because he for the American sports content. And suddenly this show came on and he heard me and he had no idea that was going to happen and thought that was quite
I told
strange.
You.
It happened before he could say go.
The Ticket has mighty reach. My friend, yeah, Lars.
As it turns out.
It does turn out. All right, we're talking about the European Championships, which kick off on Friday. We talked about the first three groups. Now let's move into the super meaty groups. First off, Group D, the Czech Republic, Croatia, Scotland, and England.
What a draw.
It is a good one.
Obviously, England, Scotland at Wembley here in London is going to be quite something, but also drawing England against the team that knocked them out of the last World Cup, Croatia. So the gods of the draw were hard at work here, putting up something very exciting for us.
Yeah, the England-Scotland game, I think, is the highlight group game of the entire tournament. I know people are going to point to Germany-France. But
you're
just
talking about from a cultural and just
yeah, the Scots and the English in a game together at Wembley. That game is on the 18th at 2 p.m., by the way, for everybody here. What about the group overall, though, Lars?
It's interesting. Obviously, England are very clear favorites to win the group. But all three teams, there are no pushovers here. All three teams have got it in them to make things a little bit complicated for England. I do expect England will progress. I expect they'll win the group. But interestingly, it would be better for them if they didn't. Because if they win the group, they end up facing the team that comes second in Group F.
Oh.
Which we'll get to. It is the group of death. So actually, it's better for England if they finish second.
Okay.
And of course, there's no way you can game that. You can't really go into it saying, hey, we need to not win one of these games. We'll see how that pans out. But no, I do expect England to win the group.
Yeah. Southgate has got, that's the most impossible job based on all of the talent and depth and choices he has to make. What do you do between Foden, Mount, and Grealish? I just think that aspect of that storyline is interesting.
Yeah, you got to take Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, Mason Mount, Raheem Sterling, Jadon Sancho, Bukayo Saka. I mean, all these guys has to fit into two or three places in the team. That's a little bit difficult. And we had this whole freak out in England this week when in the 26-man squad, he'd brought up people thought he'd brought up too many right backs. There were four right backs in the initial squad. Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier, Reece James, and Trent Alexander-Arnold were all in the squad, and people were freaking out about that. And I'm just thinking, if you're freaking out over who the 26th guy in a 26-man squad is, whether it is a third-choice right-back or a fifth-choice midfielder, if you're freaking out over that, just you wait until the games come round and some of your favorites are not going to get to play because in some positions he has too many good players. But in other positions, there's some uncertainty. I'm not convinced Pickford's a great goalkeeper, and the stats would back me up on that. Harry Maguire is super important for the defense, but he's not fully fit. Jordan Henderson is an important leader who isn't very, very rusty. He hasn't played since, February or something crazy like that? So there are some question marks here. So you have some areas of the field where it's a bit iffy, and then you have one area of the field where you have way too many good players, and I really don't envy Southgate's job in trying to pick what his best 11 is.
Yeah. I like Scotland to create some noise in this tournament.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
You have them going first or second or wild card?
You know, maybe a sneaky third.
Clearly you don't follow Scotland and haven't for the last four decades.
I'm a big fan of Scott McTominay. All right, Group E is Sweden, Poland, Spain, and Slovakia. This one's a sneaky group, by the way.
Yeah, it could be. You would fancy Spain to win it quite comfortably, even though they are in a bit of a sort of transitional period. You know, you have some of the sort of old, like Sergio Busquets is still knocking around, but they're trying to make the team younger. Luis Enrique, their coach, who's a really, he's a tough cookie, by the way. He does like triathlons and Ironman events and stuff like that on his spare time.
Who doesn't?
But he's got a glint in his eye as well, a tough cookie with a glint in his eye. He's tried to make the team a bit more direct. As you'll remember from the World Cup in Russia, they almost looked like a parody of Spain. Yeah. When they went out against the host nation, I mean, that game went to extra time, but including extra time, they completed 1,000 passes. Which is, it was just nonsense.
I forgot about
it was
that.
Just,
yeah, that was nuts.
It endless sideways passes that never went anywhere. Under Enrique, they've been working very hard to be more direct, more forward-thinking. They bring in some younger guys like Dani Olmo from Leipzig, Ferran Torres from Manchester City, and they're trying to rejuvenate and regenerate and be a more dynamic and exciting team. Still probably have Alvaro Morata up front, which might not be good. He missed a lot of chances in a friendly against Portugal yesterday. I don't expect they'll win at Spain, but they should get out of this group easily enough. And then I like my Swedish brethren from across the border, our friendly rivals, Norwegians tend to support Sweden if we're not there ourselves.
Okay.
Their team, it's a bit like Roy Hodgson's Fulham. It's kind of 4-4-2. Everyone knows what to do. Everyone knows where to stand. But they have a couple of exciting young players. Alexander Isak, who scored a lot of goals in La Liga for Real Sociedad this season. Dejan Kulusevski, who was the young player of the year in Serie A last season, then got a move to Juventus where he hasn't quite made the grade yet, but he's an exciting young player. So you have a sort of pretty robust Crystal Palace-like team with a couple of exciting young players. I think they could get out of the group here.
All right. And then the group everybody's excited about, Group F. And you can figure out what that stands for. Germany, France, Portugal, and Hungary. Featuring, by the way, an FC Dallas player. Did you know?
Oh, yes, for Hungary, of course.
Yeah, you do. Oh, okay. You knew there was a FC Dallas player on the Hungarian
team. But I knew there was definitely not an FC Dallas player playing for Portugal, France, or Germany.
Okay. Well, hey, wait a second. Okay. Germany, France, by the way, is the big one. That's on the 15th at 2 p.m. What are you thinking about Group F, my friend?
I'm intrigued by this. I mean, I suspect all of them are going to thump Hungary, with all due respect to Hungary. I suspect they'll struggle in this group, especially since their star Dominik Szoboszlai is injured and can't partake. So I would expect all of them to win, which means the way with the third place teams going through, all of them are likely going to go through. France are my tip to win it. I think on paper they're the best team. And they're not always the most exciting to watch. Didier Deschamps is a little bit of a conservative manager. He gets criticized for that. But I think in tournament football, it often works. I think they're quite simply the best team in the tournament. They're my favorite to win it. And then Germany are a bit of a mystery because they have a lot of really good players, but they don't seem to have a clear idea of how to put them together. Jogi Löw has gone back and forth a bit with formations.
And he's like leaving the team.
He's leaving. He has brought back Thomas Müller and Mats Hummels, which I think is good. They were sent off they were forcibly retired for the national team, and then they changed their mind and sort of brought them back. I think that's a good idea. They have a sort of slightly strange team where they have midfielders who are really good on the ball, so you might want to play some possession football, but then you have defenders who are kind of slow, so you don't really want to defend high up the field. Maybe you want to sit back. You have really fast forwards, so they might want to play on the counter. So I'm not really sure what style really fits this group, but there's a ton of talent in there. Like if you have like Kimmich, Kroos, and Goretzka in midfield, you know, Kai Havertz, Timo Werner from Chelsea, fresh off of winning the Champions League, with Serge Gnabry, who always scores a lot of goals from them, Leroy Sané. Like, there's so many exciting players here. If they can fit it together in a team that makes sense, they're very good. Lastly, Portugal are interesting outsiders, I think, to win the tournament as well. Also quite defensive and dogged, but they have that man Ronaldo up front, a man for the big occasions, along with Jota, Bernardo Silva, a tremendous squad. So a group of death for good reason. And I think certainly France are my favorites to win it, and Portugal are interesting outsiders to win it.
So, Lars, out of all the 24 teams, out of the big clubs, who's the most likely in your eyes to stumble? The surprise big team to not do well? Is it Germany? I mean, I'm trying to gauge it from how you've...
I think England. I think England, just because of the way the draw has worked out. If England win their group, which they should, then they're going to bump into the runners-up from the group of death in the first knockout round. And I think this England team is more than capable. I mean, most likely that should be Germany or Portugal. And I think England might struggle with either one of those. Mm. So for all the exciting talent in this England team, the draw has been unkind to them. And I suspect that they might come a cropper. I also don't love Belgium as much as everyone does, just because I'm not sure about that defense.
Yeah, those are three old center backs. I think the age of the three guys is 32, 34. 34 and 35, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And like Thomas Vermaelen, like he's gone out to play in Japan, and like no disrespect to the J League, but you know,
it's no MLS.
No, it isn't actually.
Oh, okay, thanks.
and Jan Vertonghen has looked a little bit slow for quite a few years now. I'm just not sure about. You know, at the end of the day, these tournaments are very often won by a team that doesn't mess up defensively a lot.
And that's France.
It just often comes down to that. And yes, if you look at the personnel defensively that France have, with N'Golo Kante in front of them, sort of running around kicking everyone, and then Kylian Mbappe and Griezmann and Benzema now being part of the squad again going forward, I just think it's going to be France again. I think it'll be the same thing that we saw in Russia, is that France will win the tournament, maybe without playing brilliant football, just by not making mistakes.
Our very good friend, live from London, Lars Sivertsen. You can follow him on Twitter and read all of his good stuff. We'll repeatedly put his link to him there on Twitter. Lars, thanks so much for all your insight and thoughts and friendship. We do appreciate it mightily.
Thanks for the company yourselves. You know, it's been a long year. You know, we're not allowed out very often. It's great to talk to my friends from
what
from
he's
Dallas
saying is, don't hold your breath moving forward. I see. Okay. All right.
No.
Once they open things up.
I have been speaking with my partner about when things open up again, I really want to go to Dallas. And that,
yes!
Right, yes.
That was not part of our holiday plans going forward, but I'm going to force through. It might just be me on my own. I want to come to Dallas and hang out with you guys.
We're going to stuff your face full of Tex-Mex and barbecue, my friend.
Oh my god.
And ribeyes.
And you will and steak, yes. And some steak.
This sounds tremendous. Now we gotta make it happen.
All right, we will do it. Lars Sivertsen, thank you so much. You are the greatest. When we come back, it is America's favorite soccer segment, The Dribble, next on The Kick Around. All right, special Kick Around announcement happening right now. Because U.S.-Mexico is happening Sunday evening at 8 p.m., I think it's a good opportunity, Andy, for you and I to try something new.
You're going to make me work.
I think it'd be fun, and you have to want to do that. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. We don't have to do this. We should try out the new Twitter Spaces, because I've seen other people do this.
Sounds very millennial.
Which is, if you're a Twitter user, we'll tweet out an option for you to tune in, and it's kind of like a group open panel discussion kind of situation.
So you and I talk?
And you and I can talk and discuss and break down whatever the result is of U.S.-Mexico.
And others listen and
opine? And P1s can listen and chime in, and they can ask questions or
rant. Can we
slap
them down and we block
can shut
them?
We can sterminator them. And
this isn't really an announcement.
It is an announcement.
It's a proposition.
We're going to do it.
Thank you, yeah.
We are going to do it Sunday night. Literally, when the game is over, we will start the Twitter Spaces on our Twitter account. We'll promote a link, and you'll be able to... It'll sound just like that. God, that was loud.
We'll be more efficient with words.
Though, and
right?
And we'll have a group discussion about what happened, and people can rant or celebrate or cuss at us or whatever.
Nice.
So right about, I would say, probably right around 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Sunday night, right after U.S.-Mexico.
Okay.
Kick Around
no
Spaces.
No matter the result, we're doing this.
And you can do it. Now, you have to do Twitter Spaces through the Twitter app on your phone, not the web. So it's either on your iPhone or your Android device.
You'll hold my hand through this, right? Through this technology.
You literally just have to open the app and hit a button, Andy. Okay. It's really easy.
Well, I have the Twitter app on my phone. Is that enough?
Geek out.
Yes. It's okay. Do you know how to talk into your phone?
Yes.
Okay.
With an earpiece.
You'll
sounds
be all
like
right.
You'll have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. It'll be a good time. All right, let's do America's favorite soccer segment, The Dribble. Now, Andy,
Peter.
We've been talking about the European Championships, but I know that in the world of one Andy Dalton Swift, that does not warm your heart as much as South American World Cup qualifiers.
The South American qualifiers are nuts, though. You've followed through the years.
Yes.
It is like to the death, you know.
And
you
those are happening right
they're
now.
They're happening right now for Qatar 2022. And we had one round of games this last Thursday. Few more interesting things that came out of some of those games. Uruguay and Paraguay played in Uruguay to a 0-0.
Wait, those are two different countries?
Yes, oh. Right. Neighboring countries.
Did you know that, Sam?
What did I know?
Never mind.
Not even neighboring. To a 0-0 draw. Uruguay, though, did score a goal that the...
Cavani?
Not Cavani, but Suarez had the assist. That the one of the assistants raised his flags for, called it offside. On the replay, it was clearly not offside, right? It was a secondary guy that got to the ball and he scored.
VAR.
So they go to VAR. And VAR holds up the call.
VAR.
So they need VAR for VAR. But the interesting thing here.
Okay, turn off the two VAR alarms, please.
The interesting thing here is that Comenbol suspended the VAR official and the assistant referee.
So was there something nefarious going on here?
Who knows, but they have been suspended. So I'm wondering, like in other countries, what if they started suspending officials because they blew the VAR call?
Oh, my gosh.
And who decides that they blow the VAR call? All right, Chile played Argentina, also to a 1-1 draw. Your favorite player, Alexis Sanchez, tying it for Chile in the 36th after Messi opened up the scoring with a PK. Guess who did not play that game, even though he could have and was healthy enough to and was on the team and on the roster? One, Arturo Vidal. Yes, my favorite player who got vaccinated prior to arriving in Chile or just as he arrived in Chile.
I heard he was super sick.
And got COVID in between the 2 weeks that you need to before you can like fully say that the vaccine works. He got COVID after the vaccine before the 2 weeks were up.
And didn't I hear he had some really bad symptom or something?
He just had bad symptoms.
Yeah, but no, there was one that I read that was specific. Like he was like not that he was having a hard time breathing or fast heart rate, but he had some very kind
well,
of
was it a hangover because he was caught out when he should have been quarantining during that time and then got COVID. So Arturo Vidal doing Arturo Vidal things again, even though they didn't have him, though Chile was able to draw 1-1. Everton, are you listening here, Mr. Everton?
I'm listening now that you mentioned my favorite
Do you know
word?
Who Yerry Mina is?
I do, yeah.
Do you know who Richarlison is?
Yeah, they both scored, one for Brazil and one for Colombia.
Very nice.
I tried
both
to find
Evertonians
that
scoring in the qualifiers as Colombia thumped Peru 3-0 and Brazil beat Ecuador 2-0 thanks to a goal from your favorite Everton player.
Now I just wish they could score in the Premier League when we needed it.
Yes. Alexis Sanchez doing much better with the national team than he does with the club team. But Brazil, the news out of Latin America, really out of Brazil, the big news is that, and have you been following how the Copa America, which is due to be played in about 11 days, Peter, how it's changed venues?
Yes.
Over, you know, like every other day they change the venue. Originally it was going to be played in Colombia and Argentina, and then because of political unrest in Colombia, they just moved it to be played entirely within Argentina until the Argentinian government said, not so fast, we are still in the middle of a shutdown, you can't play Copa America here. So Comenbol moved it to Brazil because the president of Brazil, Bolsonaro, said, yeah, come play it here. So Comenbol moved it and announced it that it would be played in Brazil. Until the rest of the Brazilian government, like state departments and the health departments, said, not so fast. Our COVID situation is even worse than Argentina. You cannot play Copa America here. So there's this big dispute now whether they can play Copa America in Brazil, even though the president has said yes. Local health organizations have said no. There's a big dispute. Now the Brazilian national team, after Tuesday's game, because they have another qualifier on Tuesday, they're going to announce that they will boycott Copa America in solidarity with the health department.
Right.
Because the COVID situation in Brazil is so much
so
worse.
So what happens?
Than
do they just cancel the tournament?
Well, we don't know if they're going to sanction Brazil. The federation, by the way, the Brazilian federation is with the president. They want to can the coach. They don't care about the players. They want that tournament to be played.
Wouldn't it be awesome if the Brazilian national team that played in Copa America was just a bunch of like guys
like
off the beach?
Like you and I? Like.
Yeah, right. Like just local knuckleheads or guys from like beat from, you know, some a second division team or...
Or if Brazil didn't play in a Copa America being held in Brazil.
So...
It's in 11 days, by the way, 10 days. It's crazy.
So the tournament's going to happen.
Right now, it's been announced.
And it will happen in Brazil.
Forward. That's what they're saying.
Do you think the players will bail out?
The players are going to make I don't know if the players will bail out. I think the players might find some kind of resolution in how they manage the stadiums, ingress, the rules. Maybe they postpone Copa America by a little bit.
All right. Now, I wanted to throw in my own World Cup qualifier note because I am now an adopted son to the Cayman Islands.
Oh, you have another country. Well, is this some weird relative of yours?
No, it's a friend of the show.
Okay.
Tyler Lee, who lives here in the Dallas area, plays for Lone Star Republic in DSA and is also going to play in the Roja, is doing the Roja League tournament.
Yep.
Tyler is on the Cayman Island national team.
Yeah, one of the minnows.
And that played a World Cup qualifier this week against Aruba.
And?
They lost 3-1.
Oh, did he play?
And Tyler didn't play. So.
That's why.
But Tyler was kind enough to give me an official Cayman Island national team shirt.
That's awesome. It's awesome, too, that when Cayman makes the World Cup one day, that's one of the teams you'll be rooting for in the World Cup, wearing your Cayman jersey.
When is that supposed to happen, Andy?
They won't.
No. Now.
1989, right?
Yes. Have you ever been the CONCACAF official at a Cayman Island home game?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I've shown you pictures, yes.
I don't remember you showing me pictures. I thought that was Aruba or the Bahamas.
No, that was the game in Cayman.
Yeah?
Against Dominican Republic in those early minnow rounds.
Of this current?
No, this was the 2014 World Cup.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Hope you had a good time there. So, sorry to Tyler Lee. Better luck next time. As they lost to Aruba 3-1. All right, that does it for America's favorite soccer segment known as The Dribble. I think, Andy, we had another super successful kick around radio show.
Yet another
show.
Is how you would describe it.
This is show number 263, by the way, if you didn't know. All right, well.
Happy 263.
Happy 263. So, Sunday night. Right after the game finishes, we'll turn on this Twitter Spaces thingamajig, and we'll celebrate or mourn the result of U.S.-Mexico together. Doesn't that sound like fun?
Yeah, sure. We'll have to pay attention
you
during
don't
the game.
Look like you.
Yeah,
think
it'll be
fun.
I've never done Twitter Spaces, so I'm.
I haven't either.
Okay.
But if Alexi Lawless can do it, why can't we?
Yes. Right. Sure. Hey, you are the tech expert, so I'll just follow your coattails.
Andy, it's two buttons. Come on now.
It's two buttons.
I'll figure it out.
Thank you, Samuel. Maybe. It's two buttons. It's just two buttons.
It's two buttons and talking. You do that when you
come
here.
So you press the icon?
Now, the question is, if we start it and it's just the two of us and Sam...
Can we just...
We just like, yeah.
Yeah,
if nobody...
Who?
Yeah. All right. Thanks to DJ for doing... Oh, Josh, well, I didn't think you'd care to do it.
I don't, but I want the invitation to reject the invitation.
All right.
Same here.
Thanks, DJ, for Tickers, Sam, for producing, Josh, for running the ship. P1s, we love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC, this is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound.